My guest this week is former financial executive and energy trader, turned money manager, and founder of the Financial Story Framework, Elizabeth Ralph. And she also has bought her way out of her career, out of having to work, by a decision she made. And it took her 10 years, but she did it. She was able to become financially free, to officially retire and start a passion project where she now saves unwanted horses from being slaughtered on her Givegrass ranch. And she's helping other entrepreneurs like you and I shift our way of thinking about building wealth or just prioritizing building wealth. And she is, I love her approach. She's also called the spiritual investor. So she mixes spirituality and mindset in with strategy. So you get both, which is a really powerful combination. And the thing that has really blown my mind working with Elizabeth. I consider her my money mentor. I've gone through her financial story program myself. Is that as entrepreneurs, as business owners, we tend to think about the focus tends to be on sales, growing our business through generating more sales, bringing in more clients, getting people on our email list, getting people on our in our social media community so that we have more potential to increase sales, right? And there is a piece of that that does need to be focused on for sure. But what she offers is another priority to put in front of that. And that's this idea of wealth building, because she makes the point, and it's such a great point, that really if we're relying on only one source of income, which is our business, even if you have multiple offers, but that one source of income coming from your one business, we're not really as financially free as we may want to be. And I know for so many of us, we start our businesses for the freedom, for the flexibility in our schedule freedom, for the financial freedom. But it's like if we're not considering and working towards having multiple streams of revenue to truly build wealth, not just make money, we're not that free. And so she talks a lot about that. And we have a really good conversation around life as a type five that I think you're going to find really interesting, regardless if you identify as a dominant type five or not. You probably know somebody who has some type five energy, so you'll appreciate her take on that. And then we do get into Enneagram or money blocks that each Enneagram type has. And, you know, as always, we are more than just one single number on the Enneagram. So you're probably going to be able to relate to two or three or maybe more, maybe all of them as we go through that list. But that was really helpful. I always appreciate her outlook and her perspective on these money blocks, these money beliefs that so many people have been telling themselves on repeat. So you're going to get so much out of this episode. The other thing I want to say really quickly is that I mentioned a wealth building series, and at the end of the episode, I talk like we missed it. I was confused on my days. Maybe it was too much, I don't know, allergy medication. I don't know. But that has not happened yet. If you're listening to this at the time that this comes out, you haven't missed it yet. The wealth building series doesn't start until September 7th. So that's the good news. There's still plenty of time to sign up for it, to join in. And I'm going to really encourage you to register, at least check out the first video. And if you want more, she has two more videos in this three-part series that she'll be sharing the week of September 7th. I include a link to get registered for that video series. I say it's pure gold, but it is free to you. So jump in on that series starting September 7th and know that when you hear me say you missed it, you did not miss it if you're listening to this. It does not start until September 7th, 2021. So without further ado, enjoy this interview with Elizabeth Ralph. Mm-hmm. Welcome to another episode of the Enneagram MBA podcast. This is a show for aspiring and growing entrepreneurs and company leaders who are ready to get to know themselves, who are ready to get to know and really understand their clients and their teams, and who are ready to learn how to get known as they package and promote their expertise and services in a way that truly aligns with their personality, motives, and goals. So grab your notebook or open your notes app, and I will see you in class. So Elizabeth and I were just talking about her being my first five on the podcast. So I'm going to go ahead and bring you in, Elizabeth. Welcome to the Enneagram MBA podcast, and welcome being my first time five.
Thank you. I feel completely honored. As a matter of fact, when I went through and I was looking at your other podcasts and listening to them, I was like, is it possible that I get be the first five? Oh my gosh.
Well, what's kind of, it's just interesting because it is so, you know, stereotypical. Yeah. You don't want to put people in boxes, but I've had like five threes raise their hand and say like, oh, I can do this topic. I can do this topic, which the three is the achiever, very, you know, willing to raise their hand. And so some of these other numbers I haven't had a chance to talk to. So I'm excited. And I know the listeners will be really interested to hear from you as well.
That could even be very meta, right? That's typing it is, are they reaching out to you or do you have to reach out to them kind of thing based on the type even, right? That makes sense.
Yes. Yes. It really is interesting. Yeah. Threes, sevens, that is interesting. I have to do a little bit. And even for the type nine, which they're called the peacemaker, and they tend to like process things a little bit, need just a little bit more time to process. And so I was talking to one of them and they said, you know, I think I would do better on a panel. So I would have time to kind of think rather than like a one-on-one interview. Uh-huh. So we're going to set a nine panel up soon. But so yeah, it is just interesting.
Good. Well, Leanne's nine. I think Leanne's a nine.
I know. Yeah. I got to talk to her.
I know.
Okay. So what I want to ask you just right off the bat is, and I, you know, you don't have to be an Enneagram expert, but I'm just curious, like what resonates with you from the type five description? Like, how did you know that like, oh my gosh, I think this is where I'm landing over here on Enneagram five.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just about everything, you know, I guess I'm just like, I kind of feel like I fit the mold to a T, you know, like, you know, when it talks about like, you know, craving the knowledge or the deeper understanding of something, taking a step back and getting into your own mind or walking through life as the observer role. Like that is just me as a child. Like I just remember as a child, like I would look at adults and I would be like, why do they keep making the same mistake over and over? Like, why, like, what's going on here? What am I missing? You know? And then like, I was so fascinated by like adults would talk, they would always say the same thing when they came in the room. Hello, how are you? How have you been? And I'm like, why do people say the same thing? Because that felt like a waste. I'm like, you could be talking about something so much more interesting than that.
Oh, that's so good.
So, you know, and even the part they talk about, you know, wanting to know how the world works, right? Like when I grew up, we had these, the watches where it was like a digital watch and then it had like two buttons on the outside of it. And it was like, they were usually like black and hideously ugly, but everyone wore them anyways, and nobody could set their watch. And so then everyone was like, well, just give it to Elizabeth, like any kind of puzzle or any kind of, and it was just like, I'm like, why can't you just push the buttons and the buttons tell you how it works? You know, so it's just like, when I was like, and then I became a microbiologist because understanding the way the world works, the inside knowing, I was fascinated by, you know, bacteria and viruses and biochemistry and all that. So I'm like, God, somebody wrote this, you know, I guess I'm more normal than I thought because, you know, I fit perfect into that type.
And that's what's so, what I love about it, whether it's, you know, we were talking about human design before we hit record or, you know, whatever, but I have felt very seen myself and like less crazy. Like that's, people are like, why would I get into the Enneagram? It's like, you're going to feel less crazy. Like once you find your type.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And you know, what's funny is that I have typed perfectly to the Enneagram, to human design, and to what's that other one? Myers-Briggs. I've just typed perfectly for that. And I even got like a deeper spiritual psychic to like go through. Cause I was like, are you sure this is right? And they were like, yeah.
Is that the face reading guy?
Yes. I love him. Oh, he's phenomenal.
What is his website? Cause I was on there the other day looking at it. I'll have to include that.
And then you should drop that link here for people. Cause he is amazing.
Oh yeah. He reads your face, right? And determines if your Myers-Briggs is accurate. What is yours, by the way, just out of curiosity?
INFJ. And, you know, sometimes they take it. And he was like, no, you're classic, you know, INFJ. And it was funny because like a lot of people get emotional when they get a reading from him. And I was like, well, what's there to cry about? Right. And enough, like 20 minutes into it, here I was like, it's just like this person from a face reading, like you just feel so seen. You're like, has he been following me my whole life? So there is so much to this. I'm so glad you're doing this podcast. I'm so glad that you're helping people with this, because there is so much to say about, it's not putting us in a box. It's helping us understand who we are. And as we were talking about before, even a certain level of forgiveness, you know, like, okay, I don't have to feel that I did that wrong. That's just the way I was, you know?
Mm-hmm. And almost kind of, you know, waking up. Cause a lot of this stuff is very unconscious, and then you bring it to the light, and then you're right. Like you don't have to be in that box. Like you don't have to be you're not the stereotypical, you know, whatever type is for the rest of your life. There's lots of areas of growth.
Absolutely.
And you know, specifically like with the work that we do in life and starting a business, and there's like all kinds of things I think we think of that we should be doing, that we should want. And there's like certain ways we should do things. And you know, a lot of us have made pivots in the last year with just kind of having time to like slow down and reflect. And I know you yourself, I didn't know that you were a microbiologist, but you yourself made a huge change. Would you just tell us a little bit about that? Cause I think that I have some questions around that. And I think that might play into some of this type 5 energy too.
For sure. As a matter of fact, I spent years like questioning myself, all of that. And if I had known what, like just the description of a 5 and had a better understanding, oh my gosh, I could have saved myself so much grief with that. I mean, I don't have regrets. You can't look back and say, you know, oh, well, but so I worked in finance. So yes, I was a microbiologist, and then I was just good with math, and I got into computer engineering, and then I ended up working in a financial corporation. So that was kind of like the leapfrog effect. And then once I was working there, doing computer programming, I was like, you know what? The people who have the best jobs are the ones who work in the front office, and they actually are on the trading floor, and then they do like straight up finance. So then I went back and I started like studying finance and taking these certifications and stuff. And so then I worked on the trading floor for about 11 years, and it was such an amazing ride because it was so challenging, so fun, like literally moving around millions of dollars. It was so fun. But then it got to a point where I moved into a different department, and, you know, I was glad to sort of move into mergers and acquisitions, and I was like acquiring other companies and stuff, which it was good for me at the time because I needed a transition, and they kind of saw that. I was getting like, and it says this too on the 5, it says that, how did they phrase it when I read it? It was like, if you don't feel like you've learned something that day, it feels like a day without sunshine, right?
That's yes. There is a quote. Yes. 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 Yes.
I was feeling that hardcore. So what happened is, you know, my, my managers, they saw that and they're like, okay, we have this new, business unit. Let's have you do more work with them, which was so fun in the beginning. But then at the end, I was like, I can't do this. It was feeling so routine, you know? Once you get past like the, figuring out part, and I'm not even saying this, I don't think this has anything to do necessarily with intelligence level. I just think that some people need to have input or need to be constantly solving a puzzle or something to feel that. It feels calm to me to be constantly figuring something out. That's a calming thing. And so, yeah, you know, I knew early on in my career in finance, so that I wasn't going to do it forever. So I had already started planning, and I developed a financial strategy for myself in my early 30s. And my goal was, okay, by the time I'm 40, I just had this inner knowing that I wanted to have options. And I was like, in my 40s, I need to have options. And it didn't make any sense, but that just kept coming to me over and over and over. And, there towards the end, I beat myself up a lot because I was thinking, well, how could you be so ungrateful? Look at this amazing job you have. Look at the opportunities that everyone around you has given you. Like, oh my gosh, there are people that are in the world that, you know, live on a dollar a day. And here I was making six-figure bonuses. I was like, you know, I really went to a dark level with that. And I think I would have had a greater understanding if I had understood that I just was just craving something different. But, you know, what really, really saved me, honestly, is that a spiritual guru, an Indian guy, joined our group on the trading floor. And I thought, God, who's this guy? Like, it was funny because he had like all of these Hindu like statues and stuff, which I don't know if you know, like they the Hindu religion, like they have a lot of colorful cartoon characters and very story based and really beautiful. But I didn't understand it. And then he asked our boss, he was like, can I move my computer? Because I can't face I have to face a certain direction even, you know, like he was very extreme. And it ended up, I don't know, he and I were thrown in like sitting next to each other and we ended up just laughing our asses off. It turns out we had the exact same sense of humor and we became fast friends and he actually became my guru. And he got me through some, you know, I was financially on track, but I didn't have a strong why when I first started my financial strategy. And so I don't think, you know, most of us aren't motivated by money in a bank. And so he brought that into my life and at a time that was really needed. And after working with him and, you know, I got to know his parents. They'd fly over from India and make this amazing food. And they'd bring me all these books with like these old men on the front, halfway covered in like a sheet. I'm like, don't they wear clothes over there? You know? So, yeah. And, you know, after that, it was just, you know, up from there. And that's when I realized that building wealth, really, really is dependent on having a strong why and, you know, being able to step into that responsibility. And once I, you know, found it, then it was just, you know, it was the merging of the two is, and that's why I can't teach it any different. I can't teach wealth without spirituality because I can only teach what worked for me and what I know to be true.
And that's something that it's a little unique. Because it's main, like when I have learned about financing or specifically investing, it's like very strategic. And it's like these kind of a lot of old white guys, talking about, which obviously they figured something out. So maybe there's something to take from there, but yeah, it feels like dry and it feels like, kind of out of reach for somebody like me. And so I love how you've just made it super approachable and very like within reach. And, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but just since we're talking about it, you had shared in your financial story program. And then that's my next question is how you went from that to now you have your own course. But, you had said something in your financial story question or course that one of your students changed their Instagram profile to yep. investor. And I was like, oh, wait, you can't do that. If you're an investor, like I thought you would be like in a building, trading stocks, like you calling yourself an investor. And so it was just like that idea that's like, we can all be investors and there's all different kinds of ways to be investors. So, okay. So that is, I want to hear about that. And I think, so a lot of times two people are in the same situation where they've had like this career, and a lot of people listening are in the middle or in their beginning of their journey, turning an expertise or an experience into something that they can monetize and help others with in a meaningful way. And that's, I know, very similar to what you did. So how did you make that jump from leaving your career? And then I know you bought some property that was your dream, and now you're running this amazing financial story program fusing investing and spirituality. So how did that happen?
Well, you know, as I said in the beginning, like I knew I was going to buy my way out. And I would say for someone out there that's looking to do something like this, the most important thing is really everyone has leverage factors that they can use in their life now. And it's really just being able to take a step back, again, that observer role that these fives like to do, and being able to, without judgment, because your best decisions, especially with money, always come from a place of neutrality, to be able to step back and go, you know what? These are my leverage points right now. What do I have that I could use as really an asset? If you're in a corporate job, then you have a steady paycheck, you have benefits, you have all of that stuff, right? So what portion of that can you take and put towards investing? If you're in a situation where you've got debt, then, you know, how can you be more strategic about that? Like, you know, or if you're an entrepreneur and you're like, you know, just starting, you know, a business, or even if you've gotten to where you've got some traction with your business. Ultimately, building wealth should always be the top tier plan. But what a lot of entrepreneurs do, and I would say even people that work in the corporate world, they let their business revenue strategy be the driver, when in fact, the business revenue strategy should be below the wealth plan. It should be working for the wealth plan. Because why are you doing this? Why are you going to work? Yeah, you want to help people, but you also want to build wealth and have generational legacy wealth for your family and do things for your loved ones and not have to freaking worry about money, right? You want to position yourself. Wealth helps you position yourself to do more. So that should be the pinnacle, the top priority. And then the business revenue, that goes under there. And there is always, I don't care what situation you're in, there is always a way to start building wealth. And you're at a huge advantage if you at least start it. I don't care if you're investing $50, because once you have the process actually set up, it's one button click to increase that 50 to 5,000. Like, it's just no big deal. But people wait so long, and then what happens is their life never actually fits into what they truly want. And then they're like, uh-oh, there's 3 years gone by. Well, I wanted wealth. I wanted to actually, you know, be an investor. And so people get hung up on, I can't do it right now because I don't have the money, when that's, you know, you investors are wealthy because they invested.
Yeah, I imagine
makes
that.
Sense, right?
Well, and two, this blew my mind. Like, I had never thought about what you just said about like putting wealth above your business strategies, because one of the top reasons I hear that people want to start their own business, or why they have it, but they pursued in the first place, is freedom. But I mean, it takes a lot of work, and you see all those quotes about like, oh, I traded in 40 hours to work 80 hours for myself and things like that. And you're behind the eight ball to launch or to pull in new clients. And it's not necessarily freedom, the way that maybe you had imagined. And what you're saying is, you know, by putting wealth at the top, you're actually giving yourself that.
That's exactly right. Every single person, I don't care what you're doing, I don't care how much you love what you're doing, every single person should be buying their way out of doing what they're doing right now. If everyone did that, no one would have a problem with money. If you were always buying your way out and said, I have a 10-year plan, I'm going to buy my way out of this, then what happens is at the end of that 10 years, you just have the option or you have no bills. And who doesn't want that? Even if you continue doing your, you know, but I think that it's really misaligned. It comes from misaligned priorities. It comes from, we weren't taught this growing up. We were taught to save money and we should have been taught to grow money, because growing money is much more powerful than saving money. In fact, on the wealth building series, the video too, we talk about how cash loses value over time. So people are actually getting poorer who are not investing. And that's a whole other rabbit hole, you know?
Mm-hmm. And okay, so here's something. I want to talk about the video series in a little bit too. But one of the like stereotype characteristics of a type five, like there, each type has a vice, like a, they call them like the seven passions. There's actually nine. And for a five, it's hoarding. And, and it is this belief that there's never enough. There's never enough resources and even energy. So like the superpower for the five is actually this ability to manage their energy and be really in touch, even though they're in the head triad where they're thinking with our sixes and sevens and constantly thinking and analyzing and planning. They're also really in touch with their energy level. And they know this person drains me, this thing drains me. I need to isolate, I need to withdraw, I need to remove myself. With that said, the downside is the scarcity mindset. And so what I find fascinating with you is that you have this like overflowing abundance mindset. So I'm just curious, did you ever experience yourself as that stereotypical, maybe average health five, where you have that scarcity mindset?
Yeah. And it didn't come up in like the easy plain vanilla way, right? It's, of course, it was hiding behind another belief and another belief. And it did take me a while to figure it out. And that was, so, you know, I did well early on. I had a career that was like, you know, honestly, I was able to do so much. I started buying property in, what was my first property, was 2007. And I bought property, I've bought property ever since then. My last property I bought in 2019. So I was able to allocate resources, basically turned in earned income into cash generating assets, which is always what I'm trying to teach other people how to do, whether it's stocks or real estate or crypto or what the hell ever it is, right? But I didn't realize that I had this sneaky belief that was holding me back, that once I left corporate, I did not believe that on my own as an entrepreneur, I would ever be able to build up that amount of wealth again. I thought, well, I'll just be an entrepreneur and then I'll just help people. And at least I will enjoy my time, because I, at the end, I wasn't enjoying my time so much. And so I was like, you know, it's sort of like, you know how sometimes people are like, oh, that's okay, I have enough, it's good enough kind of thing. And they're really just selling themselves short. You know, I think we do it. And you know, I think it came from, a lot of it came from that, you know, just growing up, I never saw people that just went out on their own and loved their day and then were suddenly millionaires. I'm like, well, no, you have to go through a certain amount of strife. So it was working with a coach when this really came out. And I'm so grateful, because I don't know if I could have even uncovered that I was limiting financial story in the beginning. I was limiting it because deep down, I didn't believe I could make it as big as my previous career. Yeah. And then there was also some fear that went into that as well, because I noticed that if I could never make the new career as successful as the old career, then there's no way to sidestep the fact that there's fear in that, because I could lose things that I'd already built. And what if I lost something that I'd already built and I didn't believe I could build it up again, right? So then I would catch myself on that going, oh, well, yeah, I bought those properties then, but you know, I could never buy that property, you know, now. And it was really within the first year, 2 years after I transitioned out. And that was affecting financial story. It was affecting me as an entrepreneur. And I, financial story, you know, it really didn't take off until I got clear of those. I had to get rid of those first. And once I did, and I was like, oh my God, I have more potential. Like, it just, I was like, what was I thinking? I have more potential. And that first career, all it did was just set up a huge foundation for me. I now see it like, well, this is the big door opening. That was just a setup, you know, which I'm grateful for, but it was a setup. And also, I wouldn't be able to teach people what I do if I hadn't done it at the level that I have done it at either. So I couldn't have planned this better, to be honest, Sarah. I really couldn't. No.
I'm like, okay, I'm listening. Yeah, I'm trading on the for 11 years. I'm like, okay, yeah, she obviously knows something. And that would be, you're right, like really hard to do if you hadn't. Can I just tell you, I have felt very similar. And honestly, it wasn't until, because in Financial Story, you talk like specific strategies, which like I would have no idea about. I'd have to, you know, go on research and I would just be overwhelmed and shut down. And then you also talk a lot about mindset. And can I just tell you, I have felt the exact same way that you just described. Cause I used to make six figures in my old sales job, multiple years in a row. And then, you know, doing my own, stepping out on my own, I have had that belief. And I don't think I realized that I had it until it was, you know, brought up in some of the exercises that you talked about, where it was like, oh my gosh, I could make an impact and make as much money as I did before and maybe more. What if it was even more? Right. And so that is really interesting how we limit ourselves in all different kinds of ways. But like, for me, like when you were just describing that, I was like, oh my gosh, I have had very similar beliefs about what was possible.
Yes.
So the other thing I want to ask you is, you have this really interesting, like you're very, organized, and you have like you're very strategic from what I'm experiencing from you. And you have like these plans and you're teaching on money and you've just shared your background. And also, you have this ranch and you're living your best life in this Airstream some days. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're this shaman and bringing in the spiritual. And so I just want to read something to you. And I would love to know like if this lands for you. And this is about the type five wings. And just from what you've said, I just want to know if like this feels true for you. So for wings, it can either be the number on either side of you. Sometimes people think, oh, it's my second most highest score on a test or a quiz. It's on either side of you. So for a five, it's going to be a wing six or a wing four. And our four are the artists, the individualists, sometimes the romantics. And I'm just seeing some energy from you, Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to read something. So we can be like, oh my gosh, this is hilarious how accurate this is. Or you can tell me not at all. Okay. So let me just tell you. So, and I'm reading this, this is from the Wisdom of the Enneagram book. I don't know. This is like, there's not a lot of pictures and it's very, very wordy, but like lots of great information. So this is what they say about a five with a wing four. These people seek a niche that has not yet been explored by others, something that they can truly be their own. They are often creative loners, mixing passion. They are whimsical, inventive, and their tinkering with familiar forms can lead to startling innovations. They draw to the arts and they use imagination, as well as analytical and systematic parts of their minds. Did I just describe you?
To a T. To a T. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. And that's why, my Enneagram coach, she describes the wings as like the salt and pepper And your dominant type are your eggs, how you want your eggs. Do you want them scrambled? Do you want them over easy? How do you want them? And then you add some salt and pepper. And sometimes that's helpful. And sometimes you like a lot of salt. So sometimes you're going to be really heavy on one wing. And sometimes you don't want any salt. But it is helpful in helping you find your type, because it's just because you don't resonate with like, oh, I am creative. Like maybe I'm a four. Well, maybe you are, but maybe you, that's a wing. Maybe that's, you got some salt on those eggs. Cause it comes down to the motivation, which for the five is being competent, capable, self-sufficient. And their worst fear is being dependent on somebody else, not having the answer, being incapable. Does that feel true for you?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah. I pretty much made a decision when I was nine that I was just going to make all my decisions. I remember the moment when I decided that, and I have stuck true to that, you know, take all the information in, but make a decision. It's going to come from within for sure. But you know, it's funny, this whole creative artistic thing that you're talking about, because so I grew up in a family of artists, like everyone in my family. Oh my gosh. Talk about the talent and musicians and all of this. And then there was me, who couldn't draw a stick figure, but I was good at math and science. And so they used to laugh. They're like, you got switched at the hospital, right? Because
I was that's not, my explanation.
I was not the creative one. And, you know, it's they had this, we had played games at Christmas. And so we had this game, and it was, everybody had to bring an ornament to give away as the gift thing, but you had to make it. And I was like, oh shit. Well, I did my best and I made the ornament, and it was like, everyone was laughing. Everyone wanted it because it was so horrible, right? So I thought, God, you know, I'm just not, what happened? I'm not, you know, creative. And then it didn't come out until later on with writing and designing this program and working with people and all of that. Like the creativity comes out in different ways. So I was using it all along, but it wasn't your standard definition. So again, going back to a greater level of understanding by talking about and knowing things about yourself like this, you know, that would have helped back then.
Yeah. And knowing that too. And when you were talking about this, I was going to bring this up. From what you said earlier is, you know, when you understand more about yourself, then you can ask for what you want, but it's hard to ask for what you want. And that's why I have felt like so much pressure when someone's like, well, what do you want? And I'm like, you know, I don't know what, yeah. What do I want? What do I want? Like in my journal, I have like from like 2012, I have like, what do I want?
Yes.
And that's hard to know until, because it's sometimes what other people want. It's like, oh yeah, I think I want that. But then it's like, no, that doesn't feel good either. So I'm gonna ask you about one more thing as far as a type five. And this is maybe something just for you to, if you're, you know, still filling the Enneagram to get curious about and look more into. But another thing that I have found really helpful, and I think it can be really helpful too when thinking about money and investing, and it's really helpful in relationships, is this concept called subtypes. And there's three subtypes. And so they really say there's 27 types on the Enneagram, not just nine, when you overlay these subtypes, which are called like instinctual variants. It's like nature's, your instinct reactions to things. And there's a self-preservation instinct, which is like making sure your resources, you got food in the refrigerator, you got, you know, food, water, shelter, all these things, your health isn't in line. And then there's social, where you're really great in groups. And then there are, it's called sexual or intimate or one-on-one. They call that in the workplace. And it doesn't mean you're sexual necessarily. It just means like you're really great at one-on-one connections. And I was reading the type five, and it's the social type five. And I'm not saying this is what you are, Elizabeth, but this jumped out at me and I want to read this to you. Okay. And because I highlighted Elizabeth, it says social fives are drawn to academics, science, and other forms of guruhood. They play the social role of the shaman, the wise person who lives at the edge of the tribe and can bring back secret knowledge. They engage with others and find a social niche for themselves through their knowledge and skills. Does that sound like you?
Perfect. Yeah.
Yes, I thought so too. And so just, you know, learning more about that. And with these, like you have all three inside of you, and it's just like a matter of like what's highest, what's second, maybe what's the repressed one that needs to be worked on.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, a lot of that you just described, you know, I learned a lot about myself just from working in a team of coaches, you know, because I coach BBD, you know, for James Wedmore. And what you just described is what they've actually described me as. But you know what? It is so cool. It's been so cool to see how there's not one trait or thing that someone brings to the table that is more than someone else. The way that they come in with their styles and everything, especially when we're coaching in a group, I really get to see this. It's just magnificent, you know? And so I think you always need that person that's sort of sitting on the sidelines. And I think you always need that person who's like up front by the fire, like, you know, making everybody feel good. And, you know, you always need all of these people. And I really do picture it as like a fire circle. And I think it's just, you know, leaning into as much as possible with, you know, the gifts that we have been given and what we do bring to the table here. And for me, I've even taken it to the level of what's my responsibility.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. This day is actually really significant. There was a hawk that was in the backyard, and hawks come with messages and things like that. So I really feel like, you know, the nature of the message was definitely like going to a greater level of responsibility, just with just the tools. We all come with a tool set, you know? Yeah.
And I think whether it's the Enneagram, it's human design, or just journaling or meditating, however it comes to you and whatever tools you're using, is to give yourself credit and notice your strengths and your gifts and stepping into those instead of, and this is like advice for myself too, instead of like looking around and comparing yourself to like what you don't have, and what you aren't and what you aren't good at. Cause you're, like you said, there are strengths that we all have, in a way, and it's just getting to know ourselves, and stepping into those. I feel like we could have like a half day, podcast interview.
I know.
Intermittent for like a coffee refill and a bathroom break. And I know you have things to do because we're recording this on a Saturday. So I would love, just for fun, I have 9, I don't know what to call them, if they're limiting beliefs or challenges for you that might come from a stereotypical type. Could we go through those? And then I would love to hear like your advice or your words of wisdom. Yes. From the outer brinks of the campfire.
Exactly.
let's bring you in. And just how, like, yeah, kind of address those or whatever comes up, just share those. So I'm going to start with the type one, and the type one are the perfectionists, known as the improver, always looking for ways to improve the world. The thing that I have for them, and there could be different things, is that, they have a very, strong moral compass, like what is right and what is wrong, very black and white for them. And when it comes to money, you know, sometimes there's beliefs around like greed, money is bad. And then the one that I wrote that's kind of interesting, I think you'll have to let me know if this stat is accurate. I think it came from Dave Ramsey, said 80% of people have debt that they don't necessarily want. And so for a one, they might think, oh my gosh, I have debt. It's so bad. I can't get started investing. And I know you addressed this in your course, but like, what would you say to somebody who has that belief?
Yeah, I do. I see this often, and it really, really, it ends up costing people a tremendous amount. You know, if you even look at, you know, just, just the stock market or the returns we've seen over the last 12 months, we're talking like 32%, right? So what happens to people like you've just described is they're waiting for that perfect moment, like to know exactly what stock to buy. They're waiting for like the steps to reveal themselves, and they're waiting for it to just to feel like it's just lockstep, because that way then they don't have to feel like, well, they might make a mistake. And that holds people back tremendously, because time actually does cost money. When you're not turning earned income into cash generating assets, you're actually costing yourself money, because over time, cash for the last decade has lost 7% of its purchasing power. So you literally, every year that you want to stay in that perfectionist mode, you're costing your, you have to work harder to bring in 7% more to even buy the same exact things. So perfectionism, I would say for them, go out there, invest, buy something, and don't judge yourself. Just get in the game, get in the game.
Oh, so good. Okay. So the type two is called the helper, the caregiver, sometimes the lover. They are really focused on other people's needs and could feel like any money, anything spent on themselves is selfish. Mm-hmm. So for anybody who's thinking like, who has a family or a significant other or whatever, you might think, gosh, well, investing investing in anything in myself is selfish. Like, what advice would you have for somebody like that?
I think for someone like that, it's really important to, you know, kind of do a little bit what I did in terms of really getting clear on your why. And so everything with wealth is all about positioning yourself. And so my why was that I wanted to help horses. I wanted to save horses. And there was a turning point where I saw a horrendous video and I thought, this can't happen. And I found out that we ship 150,000 horses across the border every year that go to slaughter, have nowhere to go. And I was like, that's my why. Like, you didn't have to ask anybody. It's just a knowing. You didn't pick up the phone and say, is this a good idea? Those people that you just described, their loving nature, they do have a strong why, whether they've defined it or not, maybe not, but the faster that they can define their why and then start identifying with that so that everything kind of like builds into that, then they can get away from feeling like I'm not worthy of having money or, you know, I'm not good enough for that. It's almost like a way to quickly, because a lot of that is going to be underlying money stories, but that's a way to quickly sidestep it and just get going.
I love that, the why. Okay, so the three is the thing that might be holding them back, or just like their belief. And I know you're going to have something good to say about this, is that they feel like their success, and in this case, money defines who they are. And so without making a lot of money, then who are they? What type of wisdom would you have for somebody to kind of help separate that belief?
Well, I think taking the power out of that belief, because if you think about it, that belief doesn't even make sense, because it's clear that somewhere along the way, someone convinced that person that, because we're not born. We don't come into this world as a child believing that money is connected to who we are. Like, someone has to actually tell us that. So I think taking that power away from that belief is disconnecting the fact that if that were who you were, then that wouldn't be something that you had to learn. If that were truly who you were, then you would have been 1 year old explaining that to someone never having heard it before.
Yeah. And you can be, you know, you don't have to necessarily just think that you're a three and have this belief only. And that is a really foundational belief that I still have to work to undo. I'm still unlearning. And I don't know where I picked it up, but it is like, well, gosh, if I'm not making six figures and I guess I'm just not successful, or like, I don't know who I am without this title. So I feel that, and I'm not a dominant type three, but, you're right. It's like, well, at what point then did that happen? Were you born unworthy until you made a certain amount? And that's obviously not true.
Yeah, because, you know, you could apply that same logic to so many things. Do you not feel worthy to be in a certain community because you're too tall? Do you not feel worthy to be because, you know, you have red hair? Like, you know, it's like all of this is learned. And so, you know, an interesting thing that has helped me a lot when I'm trying to get rid of like hardcore beliefs like that is to basically just tell yourself when it comes in, I don't have time for this. This is a belief. I don't have room for this. I have too many more important things to do. I have more responsibility in life. I have a bigger why. I don't have time for this story that someone connected, which makes no logical sense whatsoever. None. Which is, the thing is, if you were to look, like, let's say that you saw someone who was from a third world country and they only had a dollar a day. Do you look at them as they're not worthy because they make a dollar?
No, it's just myself.
Right. So you just get to enjoy that belief yourself, yeah. Right? It doesn't apply outside of you, just to yourself, right? So you see how you're discrediting this. You have to, when you really, really pick it apart, then, and you can see the absurdity in it, then you can step into that observer role with it.
Getting to the observer, not the, like, this is who I am. Yeah. I mean, I know personally, I know it doesn't make sense. I know logically I'm there now. And now it's just like I need to wear like a rubber band and just like smack myself anytime it starts to creep up. But I like what you said. I don't have time for this. Okay. So the type four is like, we've kind of talked about them. They're the individualists. They're very into like creativeness and being extraordinary and unique, and just anything mundane feels really heavy and they're just not into that. And I know sometimes like managing your money can feel like mundane. So what do you have for somebody who's like, oh, this just feels so boring, so ordinary, don't have time for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally get that. And probably something that I don't talk about enough is that, you know, there are lots of money programs out there that they're very structured. You know, you can set all kinds of freaking alarms and, oh, I've got to look at this every Friday or else I'm not doing the right thing. I couldn't exist that way. Like, I am myself more of a helium balloon. I don't like to be put into a structure with something. And so there is a way to actually build wealth without that type of structure. And the way that you do it is you actually draw out like a timeline for yourself and really base it on those bigger points, those really bigger goals that you want, whether it's like 1 to 3 for sort of, you know, you could pick 1 to 3 for a year, 1 to 3 for the 3-year mark, the 5-year. And it comes down to, you know, asking yourself, you know, did I do something today that put me further on that goal? That's how you get away from structure and still move forward. That's how you work with the artists, like, don't pin me down. Mm-hmm. Because everybody can ask themselves a question. And then to take that one step further, how honest are you going to be with yourself as well? And if that answer is no, then are you willing to go to that next level and say why? That's how you create. It's like, I think of it as like a real-time structure on the fly. And that's a bit like, you know, I have an understanding of that because that's the way I operate as well. Like, I don't want to get up and I do not check my stock account on a regular basis. There are people inside Financial Story who get really excited about stocks and they want to check it all the time and blah, blah, blah. In fact, I discourage that because I'm like, look, if you're checking your investments every day, then does that mean do you feel pressure to make a decision? Because that might not be a good decision that day. You might be in an awkward mood. You might have weird energy. There might be something going on in the news. my big thing is to try and get people to not do that, because you don't want to be making a decision based on FOMO. So I would say, look at that as an advantage, you know?
Okay. I could use that one myself. Okay. So the type five, we've talked a lot about, so, you know, there's some things already kind of woven into the beginning of this, but another thing with fives that they might be saying is, what they tend to do at like kind of the average level, average health level, is to minimize their needs. And so they'll say, you know, I don't really need a lot. I got everything I need right here. I don't need anything more. So for somebody who's thinking like, oh, you know, I have my retirement at work, or I know that I'm going to make the same amount, I'm just going to keep my cost of living down. What maybe inspiration would you give to them to maybe inspire them to invest, and why, you know, I guess, and I know that you have that series on, playing it safe, and mm-hmm. it's not really safe. So mm-hmm. What would you maybe say to somebody in this situation?
Well, I think the situation that you've described, a lot of, especially like spiritual entrepreneurs,
yes.
Feel that as well. A lot of people who are like, you know, I'm fine. And they feel almost like, you know, this is enough. Right. And so they defined enough, but, you know, I would say that defining enough based on your needs is actually the most selfish thing that you can possibly do, because mm-hmm. it's like Yogi Bhajan said, who he's the founder of Kundalini Yoga, which I do a lot of Kundalini Yoga. He said, why is it that we don't define enough as being enough to feed 25 other families? Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's like more that I just want to keep discussing, but I'm going to keep it right rapid fire. So that's why I'm not saying a lot. I'm just like, oh, it's so good. Okay. So for sixes, they have this interesting relationship with authority where they don't want to be told what to do, but at the same time, they want to be told what to do. And sometimes investing, it's like, I don't know. I just want somebody to tell me, what do I invest in? Where do I put my money? Is it crypto? Is it real estate? How would you advise somebody to kind of start to, who's in that position, like where do they start if they just are wanting somebody to give them the answer? Because I know there's so many different ways to invest.
Yes, definitely. Well, there's a middle ground with that, and it's actually a beautiful middle ground that is only realistic just given, you know, the more recent financial tools that have even become available. So I would compare that to like an entrepreneur who says, I want to do marketing, but I don't want to have anything to do with it. I want to hire it out. Well, how good is that really going to be? Are your people going to feel like you're even speaking to them? If whatever you hold at an arm's length distance is going to hold you at an arm's length distance too, because it's energy. And so money is energy. And so if you want to go out there and make all this money and then park it with someone else, and most people who do that don't even feel comfortable asking their financial advisor a question, right? They feel like, I don't even understand it, right? If you want to do that, then just fine. But accept the fact that you're not going to do as well as you could. What you could do is you don't have to know, you don't have to be a financial wizard, but you could get a basic level of understanding. Not only does it bring you closer to your money, so even if you do have someone else doing it, you're still not giving up, you know, the wheel. Not only does it do that, but here's something that is key that I think that people miss. If you don't have an understanding of how to amplify money, which includes a basic understanding of business, investing, compound interest, things like that. If you don't understand, these are the most powerful tools we have been given in our lifetimes. The stock market is the most powerful tool we have access to build wealth. If you don't understand that, then it's going to be like you're sitting in a room of people and you have chosen to not participate in a conversation that's life-changing. Because if you don't get a certain level of understanding, you will not recognize opportunities around you. you will never be invited to sit down at the new table where they're talking about new concepts, new innovation. You're literally letting the world go by. And it is, it's sad, really sad, because it's not hard. It's not hard at all to get that basic level to do it. So I would say for those people, take the responsibility to get the education, and then it's fine if you want to hire somebody, but you're not giving away the wheel, because you don't want to be isolated from being able to see the world around you. You're going to come across, you know, several people that are going to, you want to be able to pick up on that frequency of money that's coming out. And if you're isolated, you cannot pick up on the frequency of money.
Yes. And you know, this one, and you know, this is maybe getting a little too personal, and everybody has like their family set up the way that it is, but I've read a lot of like single mom books and going through divorce and separating, and so many women specifically tend to give the wheel over to their male counterpart in those types of relationships and just have no idea. And then they, you know, things go awry, or, you know, they don't know enough to stand up for themselves and that kind of thing. And so, like you said, like, you don't have to be the one like doing the day to day, but I love what you said about just like knowing enough to know what's happening in the background, whether it's your money or your marketing. So that's great advice. Okay. So for the type sevens, we do have a lot of FOMO, so that's there. But the thing for the seven that I have here is that, like, oh my gosh, like budgeting and like this feels so boring and so restrictive, and like we just do not like to be restricted and limited in any way. What's a different way that we could look at that?
Well, I love you people, because I hate budgeting. Like, I always tell people, I'm like, you know, there are programs out there. You know, you mentioned Dave Ramsey. That's a great budgeting. That, to me, that helps a lot of people. So I'm not, you know, no judgment here. But like I said in the beginning, I can only teach the way that I integrate this into my world. And that is, budgeting to me feels like lack. It feels like scarcity. It feels like having to do without something that brings you joy in your life. You do not have to do that to build wealth. You can actually inhabit the other side of the coin, which is priorities and abundance and excitement. And that's the way I did it. And that's the way I teach it, because I don't know any other way. And I don't feel like you can energetically line up with money if you're in a state of lack anyway. So that's why you see a lot of those budgeting programs. They work temporarily, and then the people find themselves right back in debt, because they're not truly solving the problem, which is just, you know, finding a new perspective, finding a new way.
Yes, for the seven energy in me, that speaks to me. Okay, so our type eights have the greatest energy of all the Enneagram types. They are going to bust through walls. They make things happen. They are decisive. And they might have this belief that hard work equals money. And it's like, I don't have enough money. That's okay. I'm going to go out and work hard, and I'm going to bring you back some. What would you have to say about this belief that hard work equals money?
Well, and you know, I said this in the wealth building series as well, so I'm going to repeat myself here, which is, if you are reliant on earned income as your sole source of supporting yourself, your family, your future, your loved ones, then you are only one step away from poverty. Yeah. So if you want to hold on to that, then that's fine. But you can still go out there and work hard and take 10% of your earned income and then make that money work hard. Like, if you believe in working hard, then set the bar higher for your money to work hard too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then for the type nine, it's a little bit of the opposite. And for them, like, they're focused on, like a little bit like the fives too, just, they don't want to use a lot of their energy on something. They're constantly kind of assessing, like, is this worth my energy? And, you know, it might feel like, oh my God, I'm going to have to like study the stock market. I'm going to have to like research the real estate. I know like nothing about this. This just seems like a lot of energy to get started. What would you say to somebody who's thinking that?
You can have an entire automated wealth plan set up in just a few weeks that you can set it and ride and then not even have to think about it. You check it maybe once a quarter, you're good to go. You can do that. Now you're always balancing out risk and return. So you might be giving up a percentage point or two so that you can just have that. But shit, you know, right now, you know, the stock market's even just this year, you know, we're what at like 16, 17%. So if you had a set it and ride plan and you're still making 12, 14% on your money for doing nothing, well, who doesn't want to take that deal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. That automation is like music to the nine's ears. It's like,
And it's such a great time to be doing that. The tools are amazing. And we're moving into, you know, fintech is like explosive. And that's a great area to invest in as well for your people listening to this, is fintech. And we're moving into decentralized finance. And the tools are just amazing. Incredible what you can do in terms of, there's even like artificial intelligence that'll help you pick stocks. So, you know, and that's the great thing about this whole process is the biggest thing that you have is that to apply your own intuition and creativity to your wealth. And this is the time that we get to do it. And it's just that most people don't realize that we have now entered a time where that's possible. They're still thinking that it's like when their parents grew up. So I say, you got to get rid of that because, you know, your parents did the best job that they could with giving you advice on, and most of this is where it comes in. Like, you know, dad says, be safe with money, that kind of thing. Right. But you have to ask yourself, like, if your parents had to start over in today's economic conditions, but houses don't cost $50,000 anymore. Would they be able to do it? And if the answer is no, then stop being dictated and led by those stories, because you don't have to say those stories are wrong. They were probably absolutely right for that time. But how different does today look versus 30 years ago? You know?
Oh, that's such a good point. That is such a, so, because so much of that money advice, comes from like a completely different era.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to add on to the type nine advice. And I'm just going to say, so I went through Financial Story, the program that Elizabeth is talking about, in, it was January, February. And if you're wanting to like not take up as much of your energy and your time, it is well worth having her be your guide for the mindset piece and the practical, like, get started with this type of stock, here are some tools. Just in your own words, I know that at the time of this recording, we're going into your three-part wealth building series, which when this episode comes out, they'll be able to catch the replay. How long is the replay going to be up?
You know, I'm that helium balloon that they don't tell me details.
They don't tell you.
They know I'm going to mess them up. So.
I'm
thinking less than a week though. So
okay, less than a week. Okay. That's so we'll figure that out. But I'm gonna put the link into the series because you have some really great free content around practical advice, kind of mindset. And then you are opening your doors probably for the last time to the Financial Story program. And what there are a lot of there, Dave Ramsey is a huge name. That I hear a lot. I know there's lots of other programs. I get ads on for things. What makes Financial Story different?
Oh, absolutely. It's the merging of spirituality with modern finance. And so that's what makes it different is that you're not starting from the beginning. You're not like the kid that walks in the room like the first day, like nervous and petrified. And you're like, oh my gosh, what's this going to be like? You're walking in to like people who are like you, who are on a spiritual path, who are moving forward in terms of their own emotional maturity, evolution, and just their greater sense of awareness. And we actually start there and teach you how to apply those tools to your wealth building. So it's sort of like walking into like the warm, comfy room rather than, you know, the cold, stark. And like I said, we don't do anything that's based on lack. everything is based on abundance and building from that place. And also we do, there's no one path. So you can come in, and that's what's so great about talking about this. And thank you for breaking down the different, you know, the different types of people, because you can come in and, like we talked about, if you want to be a passive investor, then we teach you what that looks like. If you want to go out and you want to be checking your stocks, you know, every day, then like I say, I don't totally recommend that, but you know, that's fine. If you want to do that, you get to sort of pick what you want to do, but you come out of it with a solid set plan that you can hang your hat on. Whether it's structured and you're looking at it every day in an Excel spreadsheet, you get to choose that. It could just be a stronger why. But the point is that when you start this, it is going to shock you how these small decisions that you make once you're on path add up over time. It's mind blowing. We've had people that they're like, wait, something must be wrong. There shouldn't be this much money there, because they forgot about it. They're one of those people, right? They just set it and ride, and you get this stuff automated. And of course, when you feel like you're doing good at something and you understand it, then you naturally like it more. So you don't even need to like stocks. That's the thing. Like, you don't have to like stocks to be an investor. I think that's what people get mixed up on. And you also, the word investing and risk are not the same words. So just because you're investing doesn't mean you're taking an enormous amount of risk either. You don't have to do that. So I think, you know, it's kind of a long-winded answer, but it's merging kind of like the, let's just forgive ourselves and recognize that we haven't made all the best decisions. A lot of people have debt. That's okay. You can still work with that. Let's just be kind to ourselves, continue on our spiritual journey, but build wealth at the same time, because ultimately that's what's creating independence for you. That's what's allowing you to go out there and do more in the world and to help more people.
Yes. And I'll just add that, for me personally, you know, I really enjoy what I do. I've pivoted along the way, but I enjoy it. I enjoy showing up on social media. I enjoy meeting new people and writing emails and putting together programs and meeting clients. But I just had this aha. It's like, what if I got sick, or what if I just needed a break, and I just wanted to like go to Paris for a month. I don't know. This is the seven in me, like imagining all these things. But it's like, I'm solely reliant on this one income. And even if I had some sort of membership, that was automatic, I would need to get more people in it. Eventually I would need to make sure that they're getting taken care of, and not saying that I completely want to disappear, but it's just like, well, what if something health related happened? And I just had this like aha, that's like, wow, I am so reliant on one stream of income, kind of going back to what you were saying with, it could be in your job, a 9-to-5 job. And I hear this advice, and for some reason you made it click, Elizabeth, where it's like, wealthy people have multiple streams of income. Okay. And it's like, you're talking about real estate, you're talking about the stock market. I would have no idea what the heck crypto is. But you teach about crypto and you break it down in a really easy way. And so there's all these opportunities to bring in. So if you needed to take a break, or if a health or a family member needed, you know, we're not balanced life is just like whatever's happening in that season, really. And so you might be gung-ho right now, but you know, next quarter there might be something come up and you can't give it your all, but like having that security, that investing, you got, you know, whatever else you're doing is also working on your behalf, and you're not really having to like do more, kind of going back to that eight, you don't have to work any harder for it. And so I just feel like so empowered. You know, I'm trying, one of my 2021 goals is to, or intentions is to like take off this like coach hat, and put on a CEO hat for my business and for my life. And so it feels really good just like being equipped with the knowledge and the how-to, and just like shifting things, unlearning things. So I, whether it's like financial story or, you know, wherever, I just highly recommend like learning more about this and getting into it. Like Elizabeth said, with $50 a month. And I, you know, I think most of us can do that. So, the doors to your program, I know, are opening,
September 13th.
I'm getting confused with the series.
The wealth building series comes out on the 7th.
Okay.
And then I think so, story open on the 13th to the 17th.
Yeah. And so if you want to check that out, see what's included, like what's happening with the breakdown of this, well, there'll be a link in the show notes here as well. And I'm going to be talking about money and the Enneagram this week. So yeah, that'll be really fun. Any other words before we sign off? I know we could have talked about so many other things, but just to kind of make this episode feel complete with where we are now, any other parting words, Elizabeth?
God, you're amazing. I love the way that you wrap that up, because you are so, so spot on. That I think that what you really just said, and I love the way that you said it more than the way that I say it, but wealthy people actually take much less risk. They set the bar higher when it comes to that. They're not willing to be susceptible. They're not willing to not be able to take that month off, right? And so I think that, you know, just to wrap this up, I think, you know, people spend lifetimes making money, but never building wealth, and separate yourself from that. Don't be that, because there's absolutely no reason. Take your power back, take your independence back, so that, you know, it just gives you so much more room for the true authentic you, these beautiful gifts that you bring forward to shine in the world. That's really what you're doing. Yeah.
Wise words from our shaman. Fire.
Yeah. So, and you know, anyone on this can, you know, find me on Instagram as well. You know, I'm happy to answer questions. You know, it's just at Elizabeth Ralph, and I'll answer questions anytime. And, you know, Sarah and I, she stuck with me now. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was going to be my last thing, was where can people learn from you and where can people connect with you? And she does a lot over on Instagram, and you share some really like kind of mind blowing quotes and thoughts. And then you also share some behind the scenes from your ranch, and that's always really fun. So it's just a good mix. It's always like educational and entertaining. So definitely recommend getting connected with her over there and letting her know like what's a takeaway from today. I know that I say this all the time, but guests like appreciate it so much, hearing something that they said impacted you in some way. And so let them know, take the time to let them know. Well, Elizabeth, I appreciate you so much. I appreciate you doing this on a Saturday afternoon. This was really fun. And I know that the listeners are going to get so much out of this. So I'm excited to share this next week. I appreciate you being here. And we'll see you.
Thank you.
See you around.
Yep. See you around.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
As always, I hope you will find and connect with Elizabeth over on Instagram. Let her know you listened to the episode. Let her know what you got from it. I know our guests love to hear from you. And as a reminder, even though I goofed and I said you missed it in the interview, you did not miss Elizabeth's 3-part wealth building series that starts September 7th. The first video drops September 7th. So make sure that you are registered for that event. Even if you do nothing else except for watch the videos around kind of shifting some common money stories that we've been taught throughout our lives that maybe just aren't as helpful, aren't really true, Elizabeth is going to shed some light onto those and talk specific strategies. So if you do nothing else besides watch that video series, you're going to be much better off as you build wealth, as you go on that journey yourself. And then I will say, when Elizabeth opens her doors the following week for the Financial Story program, I am going to be an affiliate for that. And I have gone through the program myself. I believe in her. I believe in the program. And I just think that this is such an excellent complement to us as entrepreneurs. We invest in courses around how to build courses, how to, you know, get in new clients, how to do sales, how to do marketing. And this is something that I just don't see a lot of people talking about or investing in, is how to invest and build wealth, not just grow a business. So I really believe in this program. I'm going to be affiliating for it. I'm going to be doing some fun money and Enneagram series and topics the week of the training video series going into her car open. So if we're connected on Instagram or social media, stay tuned for that. That's going to be really fun. In the meantime, I hope you will get registered for that training starting September 12th, and I will see you around social media talking money and Enneagram, and back here next week for another episode.